everybody, and welcome to Mostly Film, your one-stop chaotic shop for all things in the world of cinema. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan McWhorter, joined by my beautiful co-host, JP Payton.
Hey, what's up?
Nothing. It's cold outside.
It is. Yeah.
You were like, hey, it's not that bad.
It wasn't.
Come on over. Record.
You know, the later it gets, though.
So I'm in a Rams hoodie. Actually, I'm in a Rams puffer jacket, sweatshirts, Kentucky fuzzy socks, a Kentucky half zip pullover, and a Simple Plan t-shirt. I'm still cold.
I'm sorry.
But you brought me a heater, and that helps.
Yeah.
So that's a plus.
It is great.
I'm happy with that. And I thought I was going to have to poop. So listen, I meant to tell you this earlier. Wait a second. No, I didn't bring them. Maybe I did.
You have yet to say what it is.
Pause.
So you did not bring
I didn't bring the goods.
Unsaid item.
Yeah, so today I sold a truck to this country couple.
Okay.
Retired cop and whatever the other day. They came to pick it up today. And he brought me a giant jar.
Of moonshine?
No. Of pickled something.
Oh, I'm not eating anything pickled.
Why?
I hate pickled things.
Well, it was pickled green beans.
Oh, definitely not.
Nobody had ever. Everybody had to do this. Was like, no.
No,
and it
definitely.
Was like in red juice. And you could see peppers and all sorts of stuff. So it was what it ended up being. And it was delicious. It was pickled green beans that were pickled with jalapenos, crushed red pepper, and cayenne peppers. So they were hot. But they were good.
Nah.
Bro, they were delicious. And so me, Brian, Chris, and Josh, which those are people I work with, we all decided to take a shot of the actual juice that was in there too. So I'm surprised I haven't had to just blow my guts out yet.
Oh, yeah. I'm cut right through you.
That hadn't. And I had Taco John's after.
Yeah.
I haven't pooped. So that means tomorrow, at some point, I just saw an eye.
Yeah. Blue in the window.
Yeah, just staring at me. So tomorrow I'm going to have the poops probably at some point. Or maybe best case scenario.
Let me get home.
When I get home, because I got to take my daughter to the dealership tomorrow.
Yeah.
Morning at that too. So
working dad.
Working dad, baby. Working dad. But no, I've just, you know, since we've been together last, I've just
been
really
freezing.
It's been cold, which I'm excited for fall and winter. I love fall and I love winter. Not cold. I don't love the cold. I don't love the snow, but I love Christmas. Christmas makes me happy. Christmas is joy. Christmas is elation, and I can't wait.
But first, we gotta get through this terrible, terrible season of Halloween.
Yeah,
spooks.
Although I gotta, because we can say this now. This was a really high rated week for you.
Surprisingly, yes.
5 stars.
I didn't give it 5.
4 stars. No,
I did give it 5.
You gave Scream
a 5.
5.
Wow.
You gave Scream a 5. You gave House of a Thousand Corpses a 4, and you gave Pearl a 4.
I went back and forth on that, I think, but yeah.
On which one?
On Scream.
Yeah, to 4.5 or 5.
Yeah, but I
was the same way, and then I thought about it for the time and, you know, held it to that standard.
Yeah.
That was great. What have you been up to?
Same as you, really. Just sitting out here, colder than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
Colder than I expected.
Yeah, I didn't bring a hood tonight.
But, you know, heater's helping.
The heater is helping. Yes, it is helping. So let's jump into House of a Thousand Corpses. So Tuesday, I touched on Devil's Rejects, which is a direct sequel to House of a Thousand Corpses, and kind of talked about the vibe that Rob Zombie gives. The trailer and the imagery to everything, like the trailer for the film back in the day, or if you watch it now, the imagery for the film with the stills and then the poster art for it is intense. It's kind of scary. It's kind of jarring. It's, you know, nothing that makes you be like, oh my gosh, I want to watch this film. If you're not a horror person, but really it's not that scary at all. It's imagery. The imagery is intense and grotesque, but as a whole, like, it's just a really fun movie. Like, it's a fun movie.
Yeah. This is the movie, if you grew up like we did in very Christian sheltered homes, this is the ones where your parents would get like stuck on some kind of email chain of like, don't let your kids watch these movies. Sure.
I'm not opposed. I don't want my kids.
No child should watch this movie, but it is like there were some moments where I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. But overall, it was a great watch. For reasons that, you know, it's just gonna have to be between me and the Lord.
Wait, what? Like why it was a great watch?
I mean, of understanding why I liked it, because I really don't know. I don't know what it was.
Because it's just a good film.
It is. It really is.
And it's not. I don't have any.
The casting is great. Bill Moseley, we all end up really knowing who Bill Moseley is. Sid Haig, like in this world, in the world of Rob Zombie, like cult, like hero. Karen Black kind of became, you know, Mother Firefly, kind of just a beloved character. Which you kind of hit on Tuesday's episode. She had passed away before they were able to do the sequel to this. And then Sherry Moon Zombie.
Hottie.
Yeah. And then we forgot about freaking Walton Goggins.
Oh, yeah. Boyd Crowder.
Like the most mainstream, will end up being mainstream. Casting that I didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Well, he wasn't back then.
No, but he ends up being.
Yeah.
But I mean, we didn't even hit Rainn Johnson though, or Rainn Wilson. Wilson.
And this was right at the time The Office would have been filming. Yeah. Like he would have just started filming The Office.
And he looks it too.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah. No, yeah, this film, and I kept thinking that Chris Hardwick was Pippin.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was like, is this Pippin?
Kind of.
I had to go look. And
but
then when
he kind of looked like Haley
Joel
Osment.
At his picture, I was like, is it Pippin?
Yeah.
And then I had to look like, no, that's not Pippin.
There were a couple moments. There were a couple moments. It's like, oh, that's Haley Joel Osment. But no, time doesn't work on that.
No. So, you know, I'll read the synopsis.
Yes, please do.
You'll never get out alive. Two teenage couples traveling across the backwoods of Texas searching for urban legends of serial killers end up as prisoners of a bizarre, sadistic backwater family of serial killers. This movie's 89 minutes, which is perfect. Like, it doesn't, nothing overstays its welcome. Nothing feels forced. The pacing isn't rushed. Like, that's part of the reason this film feels so good, because it doesn't overstay anything. No scene sticks too long.
It honestly felt longer than the 89 minutes.
I agree. Really?
But in a really good way.
Yeah.
Because this movie cuts from scene to scene so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It literally carries you through this house of horrors at a careful, steady pace.
Yeah. But also brisk. Like I said, nothing sticks long. But it all makes sense and it doesn't feel forced. Like, yeah, everything about House of a Thousand Corpses, editing, pacing, is part of the reason this film's so successful. And like, just the chaotic way you get introduced to each character in like a homemade video form of fashion, and like all the desaturated random 3D heat vision lenses Rob Zombie uses, bizarre, but like they work. Like, it's just a very off-putting film style, but like in a intriguing kind of way.
But you can tell it's very genre impactful.
Yes.
Like, I mean, Rob Zombie is one of the more influential, you know, horror directors.
Yep. And this was 2003, and it definitely feels 2003, but not necessarily in a bad way. But anyway, yeah, so Rainn Wilson and his friends are basically recording a podcast or, you know, YouTube video channel, whatever, you know, documenting weird freak sideshow freak shows, and they come across Captain Spaulding's house of serial killers. No pun intended, serial killers. Like, it's like a ride in this gas station. And they take them through and they get introduced to the myth of Dr. Satan. And then after they get off the ride, Captain Spaulding tells them where they can find them, where they can find the bones or alleged last place he was buried or whatever. But is he buried? Blah, blah, blah. Of Dr. Satan. And when they get out there, they blow a flat. they get towed to the Firefly household, which is where their worst dreams come true. Where Baby and Otis and the mom basically just go on this torturing cat and mouse rampage game with them. And you turn to find out they've been doing this for years to thousands of hundreds, at least hundreds of other people, hundreds of other victims. And it's their job to now try to escape if they can. But it doesn't really give you, like, there's not one point in this film where it feels like anybody's going to escape. Like, it's not one of those movies where it feels like anybody has a chance.
Yeah.
Like, in a lot of horror movies, you're watching like, oh, they can get out, they can get out, they can get out. Or are they going to get out? There's not one point in this film. The first time I watched it, the second time, I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to make it out. Even the girl at the end with Dr. Satan. Like, there's just, you just know they're not going to make it out.
Yeah.
And I liked that. Like, it's just kind of subverts the genre. There's no hero in this movie. Everybody's just the worst.
Yeah.
And that's and I was also shocked how quick Rainn Wilson died because he turned into a mermaid, you know.
Yeah. Had to get on that set.
Yeah.
The office.
I bet he was glad to go from the merman to Dwight. But for me, one of my biggest takeaway from this film, besides the pacing, is just the set design and the character designs. Like, this film is just beautiful in a grotesque kind of way to look at. And there's a lot of interesting just the way, like, you think of Dr. Satan or the guy that the animatronic that's in there doing the surgeries and stuff like that.
Yeah.
With all the, like, the spider arms and stuff. Like, there's just so much fun stuff to look at. And it's impressive by how much practical effects and gore they put in there, and it all look, you know, real and convincing.
I totally agree. Watching this, it felt like we watched Mad God a few months back, and whole reason we're kind of doing this series is because I do not like horror movies, and don't have a lot of experience with them. And watching Mad God, I was like, I could get into something like this. And sure enough, like, Rob Zombie finds a way to kind of capture that kind of take on that world. That's that type of world of just,
this feels like a live action Mad God.
It's absolutely filthy. And whenever you get to the Dr. Satan, portion of the movie,
it reminded me of the Beetlejuice waiting room.
Okay. Yeah. But also kind of just got like a, like, it felt like something Del Toro would come up with as far as like the design.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, I think people write this film off as being some, like, I mean, it is sadistic, right? It
even says the title,
but it, like, some sadistic, satanic, blasphemous, hell, demonic film. And yes, there are elements to that in this film, but it's so tongue-in-cheek, avant-garde, that it's not, like, you know, distasteful. I don't know.
It's definitely distasteful.
See, I just didn't get that. Like,
no, I mean,
I found this film to be so almost charming.
It's charming because it's charming to the people that
are fucked in the head.
Yes. And also, I forget how I thought of it when I was actually watching. It's like, a lot of my family is super into this stuff.
I thought you were going to say anti.
No. So, my cousins are really into this stuff. And it's just, they would watch it and would absolutely love it and see, like you said, that tongue in cheek, like, oh yeah, that's how it almost gives, like, the kids captured, like, their reaction to them, how they view them, is how the viewer really is seeing the world,
right?
And they're the POV.
You know what one of the most disturbing parts of this film was for me?
What was that?
The grandpa doing the stand up film or the stand up comedy. I was like, it's like one of the grossest parts of the movie for me.
Because of what he's saying,
the way
so
he
bad.
Says it, what he's saying, everything about it just made me feel like,
yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, I was like, gross, man.
Yeah.
So gross.
I mean, grandpa, man, they don't have any, just real crude, you know?
He started doing the piggy snorts. I was like, man, this dude's just effed, bro. It was like at that moment you realize how messed up this family is, too. It's just like, the dinner was a good giveaway. But.
So you hit on this Tuesday's episode. You watched,
The Devil's Rejects.
Devil's Rejects, which is, like, how this movie ends, honestly kind of took you for a twist because we think the girl's getting away. She ends up with
Captain Spaulding.
Captain Spaulding. And Otis ends up being in the back seat. And then she then wakes up back in Dr. Satan's laboratory, whatever you call it.
Which that's the only real plot hole to the film. The second one, there's no acknowledgement of the Dr. Satan stuff.
Oh, they just completely write it off?
There's not mentioned one time.
Probably.
It literally goes straight into like, I mean, it may not be direct hours, but like a day after or whatever.
Yeah.
They go straight into the standoff with the police and they've raided the Firefly household. And then they're on the run after that. And they never mention Dr. Satan or go underground or anything like that.
Huh.
So I'm not really sure what to do with Dr. Satan. Maybe they explain it in Three from Hell.
Maybe.
But I haven't seen it. And then 31 is another Rob Zombie film. That's kind of an anthology of sorts.
Yeah.
So kind of same world as Devil's Rejects and all that kind of stuff.
But
no, House of a Thousand Corpses, I think it's a fantastic film. I really, really enjoyed it. I had it at I had it at 3.5 and I kept it at 3.5. I could probably I always say if I was gonna lean more, I probably lean more towards a 4 than I do a 3. I definitely do lean more towards a 4 than I do a 3. I think Captain Spaulding, like I said, I think he's one of the best written, portrayed horror characters, like an icon.
I think the opening scene, whenever he's being robbed, is absolutely,
and that's a perfect tone setter too.
Yes,
that's the whole tone of the movie.
It completely gets rid of any disillusioned, like edge of your seat kind of horror that you first think of whenever you see the trailer.
Yeah.
And I mean, just the back and forth with the old guy, which is great. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. That was, of course, a great film. I'm glad you liked it. I'm shocked. Yeah. I was surprised you liked it. So that brings us to, what are we going to do? Pearl or Scream?
Are we doing Pearl?
Pearl. Okay. Brings us to T West, sophomore film, Pearl, starring Mia Goth. It is a prequel to X, which I discussed on Tuesday's episode. If you haven't listened to it, I'm not going to break it down again. And it is, the caption or the synopsis is, the extraordinary origin story, a little pun on the word X there. Trapped on her family's isolated farm, Pearl must tend to her ailing father under the bitter and overbearing watch of her devout mother. Lusting for a glamorous life she's seen in the movies, Pearl's ambitions, temptations, and repressions all collide in the stunning Technicolor-inspired origin of X's iconic villain. Because she plays the old lady in X, which is set 60 years later into the future.
Yeah.
So I just want to get this out of the way first.
Okay.
What did you think of Mia Goth's performance in this film?
Great.
Oh my God.
Absolutely amazing.
Tell me that's not an Oscar snub.
I don't know about Oscar snub, because there's issues with this movie. I don't think it's on T West. I thought it was obvious. We'll get it right out of the gate. Like, one of the plot lines of this movie is that everybody is being super germophobic because there is a pandemic happening. Which is just, it's super, super obvious. They're recording during, COVID-19, and they're having to wear masks on set, and it's creative in how they're doing it, but I feel like they are bringing it up in a way that's not driving the plot per se, but it's just like explaining what's happening, which I think if you have to do that too many times, it's hurting you. But one of the few critiques that I had.
That was?
Yeah.
But that monologue, and it was a one cut, holy one take cow, monologue at the dinner table with, what was her name?
Mitzi.
The fact that that's a one-off monologue, see, that to me was an Oscar-worthy monologue. I think some people who get nominated for Oscars don't do that much just emotional monologuing. Like, it was amazing. And then the end credits scene where she just holds... Or not the end, the whole credits where she just holds that face, bro. Nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts. Mia Goth is insane. I think she just maybe broken and insane.
Yeah, so Mia Goth basically is, Pearl is stuck at this farm with a dad who is disabled, wheelchair bound, and a mother who is a German
sympathizer.
Yeah, they set that up very early.
Takes place during World War II.
Yes, takes place. Yeah, needless to say, it takes place during World War II. And Pearl is married, apparently.
To a soldier.
Yeah.
Howard.
Be honest, I thought she was kind of like...
Mitzi's brother.
Yeah, I thought she was kind of disillusioned to like...
If she really was or not.
Yeah. But when Mitzi was introduced, it was like, oh, okay, she really is.
Sister-in-law.
Yeah. But basically, Pearl hates her life. Hates living on a farm. Has different instances where she kind of snaps on animals and
that poor goose, bro.
But she befriends a crocodile or alligator.
Yeah, but that goose got.
Did. And there's all this tension between Pearl and Ruth, the mother, and basically Ruth sees this evil in Pearl and blames her for everything. The dad is obviously can't do anything. There's the moments where Pearl is having to take care of her dad.
Did you ever think it was going to end up being like her raper dad?
No, because I think she has so much animosity towards them. Like the pinching was like the first sign of like, oh, she would
on the finger.
She would stab him if she could.
Yeah. See, I at first though, I thought it was going to be like a, she was going to like try to massage his wiener or something.
No,
be real weird.
That's
like,
weird. It's like, can you feel that? No.
I thought, would it have surprised you? No.
But not so she wants to get out of this farm. She her only escape is to
go to town.
And she likes to go to the movies where she can see dancers, which is her lifelong goal. She wants to be
a Rockette, basically.
Yeah, she wants to be a Rockette. She ends up meeting one of the what are they called back then?
Projectionist.
And he's tall, drink of water, tall glass of water, like good looking guy. But Pearl's this, you know,
attractive farm girl.
Yeah, but she's spoken for.
Yeah, married. Yeah.
She's married. She can't pursue this.
War, someone fighting overseas.
Yeah. And, you know, the projectionist is like, it's okay. Fine. If you ever want to come see you get a free movie with me.
Mm. I'll even let you see the projection reels.
Yeah. And what happens after, it's just a slow decline of just someone mentally breaking down. And it just results in, this movie didn't really have a lot of jump scares.
No.
But there are some definitely scary moments. Especially that dinner scene where she's basically decided I'm going to leave and
with her mom and dad.
Yeah. She's going to leave her mom and dad. Ends up catching her mom on fire, which I thought was a little dramatic as far as like how quickly she got burnt. Didn't feel like that long, but
no,
she's basically dismembered or like disfigured and all this stuff and hides her in the basement. Meanwhile, the dad's silently freaking out, doesn't want to be next. And Pearl,
the tear running down his face.
Yeah. Pearl ends up packing up and leaving to go see the projectionist,
which is the death sentence for the dad because
he can't do anything. Yeah,
she's gonna leave him to starve or rot in his own mess, basically.
I thought she poisoned him though.
I think she did too.
Okay. But because it was after he was still alive.
So. Yeah.
So she hadn't freaked out. She'd freaked out on the mom. Dad was still alive. Mm-hmm. She goes to see the projectionist. They sleep together.
No, she smothered her dad. Didn't she?
No, because she hasn't. That's after she kills the projectionist because he introduced him. She introduced the projectionist to the father.
Yeah, right.
She kills the projectionist, then goes full tilt into killing the dad.
Yeah, because he wasn't into her, the projectionist, like that.
So basically Pearl has slowly but surely killed everybody. And when it's time for her big dance number to hopefully get taken by this troop, she's just not what the judges are looking for.
Nope. But Mitzi is.
But Mitzi is. Mitzi is the one that told her about the contest.
We
don't like her because of the type of character is, but Mitzi did nothing wrong.
No, and Mitzi isn't mean to Pearl. Yeah. She actually helps her out. She's now, kind. She thinks she's backwards and weird. Yeah, you get those vibes, but she wants what's best for her because she's married to her brother.
Yeah.
And she's just trying to be a good sister.
Mm-hmm.
And, but Pearl is just eaten with jealousy and ends up inviting Mitzi over or whatever. And then
I will say, I loved during the monologue because Pearl is basically, once she's killed everybody and she's confessing everything to Mitzi, she drops some Easter eggs for X.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up speculating Maxine.
Yep.
You know, it's, I'm interested. It got me kind of hooked.
Yeah.
That I think if I'd watched X first, it would have been a much better payoff for
Pearl.
That's
why it was a suggested watch for this week.
But overall, Pearl is not scary.
No, not, it's not, but it's a not horror scary. Movie.
Yeah.
It's a, or a spooky movie, at least.
Spooky.
Which I think that's one of the things we need to revisit on our last week when we do
this. Like, yeah.
What is a horror movie? Because most of the films that we've watched right now haven't been objectively scary.
No.
But they've been what are considered horror movies. Like even Scream's considered one of the greatest horror movies of all time. But it's not a horror movie. It's a slasher film to me. And it's a comedic slasher film, but that, which we'll get to that in a minute.
I can't wait to talk about Scream.
I don't want to rush to this because one thing Pearl has going for it that none of the other films do has some of the best cinematography to me.
Oh yeah,
I've seen ever. Like well, the fact that where it, this felt like
last
the,
2 years, it should look good.
The technique. No, I'm just on like the way T. West filmed this film.
Yeah,
like the it literally felt like something out of like the RCA, you know, 1970s, was, 80s experimenting it, with color for the first time. Like
it was nostalgic.
Yes, but without being forced. Like, it just literally felt like a film out of place.
Yeah.
And I loved that. And this film screamed, make me a black and white cut, like Nightmare Alley. Like, I would love to see black and white version of Pearl with, like Emancipation did with Will Ferrell or Will Smith.
Yeah.
With splashes of
red.
Red. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Gorgeous.
I think it would be good, but I don't think it would be as effective.
No, because that's part of the point of the film is that, I think that's still like Pearl, the option.
I mean, I think Pearl is really vibrant.
Yeah.
Whereas,
which we didn't even talk about the dance recital. Oh, was great. God, her meltdown is great.
Yes. Just a great movie.
It really is. It's one of those movies I thought you might watch with Caitlin and see what she thought of that one.
I wanted to, but I'm kind of glad I didn't because I think it wouldn't have had a good payoff without X.
Are you going to watch X with Caitlin?
Maybe. I don't know, man. I'm not saying I'm changing, but
I'm glad you did this. I knew that these movies would change you a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I think some of the best, not only acting in some regards, but just some of my favorite films are what are considered thrillers. I consider these thrillers more than horrors.
Yeah. And we can probably, unless there's anything else you need to hit on Pearl, this can be our transition.
No, just Mia Goth. I think
Mia
that
Goth, freaking,
Mia Goth, like all the other performances were good. But Mia Goth just outshadowed
which
everybody.
She has writing credits for this one. Mm-hmm. I think it shows because, I mean, what Pearl is saying, these monologues, it felt so personal and real and almost self-reflective.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, Mia Goth is extremely attractive, but there's different, there's like, she's saying a line of like,
too.
I know, it's like a more like, tour like you know avant-garde just like she's one of one
yes definitely
and yeah I think
she's one of the best young actresses that's out there right now.
Absolutely.
She pigeonholes herself in these kind of films. That's why I'm excited to see her in Frankenstein, which it's still going to be a horror kind of film, but it's a Guillermo film, so it's going to be more artsy Hollywood too.
Yeah.
And then like Infinity Pool
though, I think some of the knockback was that it still felt kind of Pearl.
Yes, that's what
like
I was gonna
she
say.
Was.
She
like,
did great, but it wasn't. I was gonna say it's not it anything was, different. That's why I'm excited.
I
want to
say Infinity Pool is right off the heels of
Pearl. Probably Pearl. Filming directly after.
So
yeah.
Knowing the type
Jamesy.
Of actress. Yeah, I mean, she was still locked in.
Yeah.
On Pearl. So
yeah. The last thing I want to mention about this film is the Scarecrow.
Lucky man.
The Scarecrow maybe didn't have a brain, but sure had the wood. I made that joke in my review. I had to go find it. I knew I made a Scarecrow joke when I was still writing reviews. That was on there.
Yeah.
And someone corrected me in my freaking review. I don't see who it was.
He didn't get a brain.
Good review. Okay. So at the end, I said, listen, that duck was a jerk. He had it coming. You know what I'm talking about?
PETA got you?
Yeah. And no, this lady goes, good review. Clap, clap, clap. I really enjoyed it. However, it wasn't a duck. It was a goose.
Yeah, I called him Mr. Goosey.
Fuck you, bro.
Mr. Goose.
I'm sorry. I said duck. You're going to come in here and say, it's a goose. I'm like, all right, you know what? Brash Bella. Boom. Middle fingers okay, to you, bro.
Gotcha.
It's been 1 year ago that I wrote that review.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, but yeah, I forget the point I was going to make about
Pearl.
Yeah, but with
Wait. T. West, where do you stand? You think he's going to be? You think he's going to ride this wave of the Jordan Pills and Zach Kreggers and be? I mean, because I
Maxine,
love X.
I think Maxine has potential to be pretty amazing. What's the who's the protagonist? Like opposite of Mia Goth?
Because I think it's Juan Carlos Esposito.
I thought
Elizabeth Debicki is the main girl in it besides Mia Goth.
Okay. So I think there's a chance this could be almost Seven.
Like David Fincher Seven?
Kind of. Hear me out. I mean, it's a killer, it's a serial killer movie. There will be innocent people. Maxine's going to have lots of trauma from X. She's going to enact that.
See,
in
I don't
ways.
Think she is going to have trauma. I don't think she, I think she's like a psychopath. I don't think she thinks of it as trauma.
Yeah, but really? Even though?
No.
Even though she was, was there anything in X that insinuated that she was?
I don't think she was a killer before the events of X. No.
Yeah.
But the way she handles everything and the way she drives off,
it kind of unlocks it.
I think it unlocks. Yeah, I think it. I think that she's gonna be fine going into Maxine.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. I think now that she's done it, I don't think she'll hesitate. But I don't think it is like some sort of like trauma. I think it's just like
so.
Oh, hey, I'm nuts.
So I'm not. So she is the killer in the next one, in Maxine.
So we've got to remember Pearl is unrelated. It is a prequel to who the old lady is in X.
Yeah.
Mia Goth's character, Maxine, is the main character in X.
Who
is the main character
in Maxine.
It's the only connection.
So I think this is almost like another life. Like a even though they are running parallel in the same life in X, I think it is a kind of passing of the torch as far as like the life that they live, because she is living the life that Pearl would had.
Yeah, it's just like a spiritual successor.
Yeah.
But it's a direct sequel to X.
I understand, but I think it's still like Mia Goth is the serial killer that is, you know, having her sexual exploits and then killing them to kind of
like a Black Widow
finish it off type of thing.
You need to watch X, then tell me.
Okay.
Because I'm thinking no.
So you think like this is like a Scream or Friday the 13th where there is a other unknown protagonist that is hunting her down?
No.
And Mia Goth is?
No. No. I think Mia Goth is still going to be the psychopath.
Killer.
Yeah. But I don't think it's because of the trauma that it caused. I think she's just nuts.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, and I guess I'm not saying that X is the end results of X is the driving plot line of Maxine.
Yeah,
because
she just leaves and starts.
There is something that's happened in X that has just otherwise obviously changed the makeup of this character's like driving.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We're on the same page.
Okay. Yeah, we just took us a minute to get there.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about Scream.
Yeah, I was going to say with X and Pearl, like these are movies that are kind of redefining horror to some degree.
In addition to like Barbarian and Get Out.
Yes. And it is like Pearl is kind of campy.
Yeah.
There are moments where it's kind of.
And this is one of those films I don't think it was purposely campy. Like Rob Zombie's film are purposely campy.
Yes.
And done well.
Yeah.
With it. But.
And these movies have been super influential on pop culture. I think mm-hmm. that's why I'm enjoying some of these horror movies, because I'm seeing the impact that it has, not only in just like horror culture, but like just pop culture in itself. And none has been more influential than Scream.
No.
Halloween
more so than
Halloween is great, but Jamie Lee Curtis, and that's really it that I know of really getting a name. Scream has been, you know, absolutely groundbreaking. And it was an absolute delight.
Agreed.
So why don't you talk about it for me?
So I'm going to read the brief synopsis of Wes Craven's 1996 masterpiece that is Scream. Someone has taken their love of scary movies one step too far. A killer known as Ghostface begins killing off teenagers, and as the body count begins to rise, one girl and her friends find themselves contemplating the rules of horror films as they find themselves living in a real life one. So the movie kicks off with Drew Barrymore having a very shockingly small portion to do with this film. Because she's on a lot of the cover art, and you know, she's one of the top billed characters. Drew Barrymore is arguably one of the hottest up and coming actors at this time at her age. So you would think that when the movie starts with her, that she's going to be like the main, because honestly, I don't know anything about Scream really. I mean, I knew that Neve Campbell has been in a lot of them, and so is David Arquette. So I knew that they were a big part of it, but I just assumed Drew Barrymore was too.
I don't know. Courtney Cox.
Yeah. And Courtney Cox. Yeah. But no, she's like one of the first, she is the first person, well, not the first person, but one of the first two people to die in this film. First one, the big one that matters. But out the gate, you're immediately, because, you know, Scream is associated with being funny. That's always been a nomenclature around it. Like, it's a funny, very, to disarm the tension, like it's funny, but not like in a forced funny kind of way, like real comedic beat points to defuse.
You don't cast Matthew Lillard and not expect to just be completely,
well, even Courtney Cox, even though she's in the height of Friends here, and like,
oh, definitely,
you know, she's not known for horror. Drew Barrymore wasn't known for horror. Like, you have a lot of Skeet Ulrich, even, like, wasn't known for horror and stuff like that. You know, this isn't a horror casting, not really. David Arquette, none of these people. So
I don't know, Skeet Ulrich looked absolutely menacing.
Oh yeah, which we'll get there, but. Yeah, so, but one thing I liked about this film out the gate was, because I was thinking, you know, this is going to be stupid, this is going to be cheesy. I was fully expecting to come to this, give it 3.5 stars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just not hold up super well, and just made me think it was like, it was too forced, cheesy. It was, you know, it didn't really have a good identity or a good consistent tone. But dude, this movie sets the tone out the gate, and like the way that they, and one of the things I loved about it, and I'm sure you and I are going to touch on, is like, talk about pop movies taking credit from the, or taking like cues from this film, like the opening scene with the phone call and like, hey, I see you, I'm in your house, you know, I know what you're doing right now, I'm messing with the doors and locking them and unlocking them, you know, that like psychological, you know, funny games kind of stuff that's going on, right? It's shocking to see how many movies, like, I was like, man, I've seen like 500 movies that have the same plot point, like with the house and the locks and the phones, and
even like the killer POV that you get a lot of in Friday the 13th, which I am, if you missed last week's pod or Tuesday's pod, I ended up watching next week's movies this week.
Yeah.
I'm glad I watched Friday the 13th before this, though, because they spoil who the killer is in the first one, which, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched Friday the 13th yet, it's Voorhees' mom.
Mm.
And I think that makes what makes that movie really effective is that reveal. But so
you've never seen Friday the 13th?
Never had. No, all I've known about Friday the 13th is Ski Mask, Jason. That's all I've ever known.
Yeah, Crystal Lake, baby.
Yeah,
Crystal Lake.
But it is the first, the Drew Barrymore scenes are, I mean, it really sold it for me.
Yeah, it is intense.
Yeah,
like I was like thinking to myself, like, this is kind of scary, and like, not like I was scared then, but like, home invasion stuff always, that demonic stuff.
Oh, especially since the whole scene is taking in not broad daylight, but
all the lights are on. And she's doing normal, locking the doors.
Yeah.
Like trying to call the police. Like she's doing what normal people would do. Like, and like turning on the back porch light and like not being crazy when he's telling her to do things. She's still being like, you know, staying away from the window when he's talking to her, like getting out of sight of the killer. Like, I appreciated that part of it. And I appreciated that the killer was smart, but realistic, like not like super, like Michael Myers or Jason, like some supernatural force.
Yeah.
You know, they are still human and can get kicked in the face and fall back. And, you know, but like the way he killed Drew Barrymore and like strung her up when her parents were getting home and all that kind of stuff. it just set a tone that I wasn't expecting from Scream. And out the gate, I was like, oh. Totally. It's like that scene from Django Unchained. He goes, I was curious, but now you have my intention or my full attention or whatever. I was like, yeah. That was me in the first 15 yep. minutes of Scream. And then it turns into like, you know, not another teen movie. You got, you know, Matthew Lillard and Neve Campbell and Rose McGowan, Skeet Ulrich, Jamie Kennedy, all are your friends that are hanging out in college or in high school. Is it high school?
Yeah, they're in high school.
Yeah, they're all hanging out in high school. And then David Arquette is Rose McGowan's older brother, David Arquette, who is, or Dewey Riley, who is Neve Campbell and Rose McGowan's character, Tatum and Sydney, are best friends. And then Dewey's older brother, who's a deputy, new deputy. So, you know, the Ghostface is the killer who killed Drew Barrymore, which everybody's familiar with, this the white ghost kind of face, Ghostface from Scream. You know, the black, you know, not a trench coat. What would you call it? The black
cape.
Cape, shawl. I don't know how you describe it.
Just call it a cape.
Yeah. And with the Scream mask on, Ghostface mask. So, you know, that's what's going on in the school. People are kind of scared. They'd end up like canceling school because another murder happens. Who's the second death? Because they end up canceling school pretty quick. Or was it just from the first one?
They canceled school because they came after Nancy or whatever her name is. No, Sydney. But the principal is killed once he's canceled school, though.
Yeah, that's right. Who is the principal? It's the guy from Happy Days.
I mean, it's Henry Winkler.
Henry Winkler, yes. Yeah. So Henry Winkler's the... And he provided some fun comic relief, too. I liked Henry Winkler's character as the principal.
He actually... did not get credited for his role.
Really?
Because the producers did not want to take away from all these young up and coming actors.
Because he was probably pretty big at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's huge. He's the Fonz.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, not at that point. He's done with the Fonz. He had gray hair.
Yeah, but he's the Fonz. You see the Fonz like, oh, what's the Fonz doing?
Yeah, right. Yeah. But yeah, it was after the principal got killed, they decided to cancel school. And this is where all the real stuff happens. So, like, you have Matthew Lillard, who's, like, the, you know, dumb, never takes anything seriously, douchey friend.
Yeah.
To comic relief. Then you have Skeet Ulrich, who is the love interest of Sydney Prescott.
He's the
bad boy.
Entitled bad boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you have Jamie Kennedy, Randy, who is the nerdy, knows every cliche, works at like a Blockbuster type store.
Yeah.
Then you have Tatum, who's Rose McGowan, their best friend, Sydney's best friend. And they're all together and they're trying to figure out, you know, who the killer is, how they're going to stay safe. And Sydney Prescott, Neve, is super, super upset and worried because she thinks the killer may be the same killer who raped and killed her mother 10 years prior to this date or something like that.
She doesn't think that at first because we find out that she has already accused
Liev Schreiber.
Yeah, the guy's been, he's on death row. But yeah, she begins to speculate, maybe I haven't got the right guy.
Yes, and that's because of Courtney Cox, Gail Weathers, who is a news anchor and also who's about to publish her first book about Sydney Prescott and the sending away of Cotton Weary, Liev Schreiber. The guy who allegedly killed her mother because she didn't believe that he was guilty. And as the film progresses, Courtney Cox and Neve Campbell kind of come to see eye to eye on that and realize there may have been a mistake. Which, side note, Liev Schreiber, what a great actor to just have like...
Just sprinkle in there. He's got the next movie.
Yeah, so. And another one too. He's in two Scream movies. But so, you know, the film continues to move forward and... Ghostface is at Sydney's house and she's trying to call the police and all this other stuff. And when she, right before someone gets to the house, Skeet Ulrich shows up in her window and drops a cell phone out of his pocket. And she starts to assume that it's him, that he is the killer. So she reports him. He gets taken to jail. What happens next after that? I don't want to just microanalyze every scene. Yeah, I'm trying to hit the big plot points because him getting boyfriend Billy.
It's important to know that Dewey, who is he's a cop as well, Tatum's older brother, he takes her home to their place, stays the night, and Sydney gets a call from Ghostface again
Oh, and her dad's
while
her dad went on a trip.
Yeah, he had a work trip,
and that's the last year. Early in the movie, you don't hear from him again.
Yes,
for a while.
Yep. They could not get a hold of him.
Yep.
But while she's at Tatum's, she gets a call from Ghostface again, which is alarming because they think they already have the guy responsible put away,
which is her boyfriend, Billy Loomis.
So they end up basically finding out that Billy's phone records don't have any proof that he made a call, so he gets out. She's back in school and she has another run in with Ghostface.
And it honestly makes you kind of think it's Dewey. That scene
at
where
that
they're
point,
calling. Yeah.
So this movie is really, really effective in misdirection.
Yes.
Because there's
I didn't know who the killer was. Somehow I've made it 23 years.
Yeah.
Without not knowing a single spoiler about this specific film.
I knew half of it.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't know any of it.
I didn't even fully know half of it. There's a heavy portion where you think it's Dewey because Dewey's just super dorky, kind of socially awkward.
And he's always like,
he's always around
right after Ghostface. Like,
always
if Ghostface is there, he's there right after conveniently.
Yeah.
And like when that call happened, they were beating on his door. Oh, he's on the phone. He's on the phone. He's on the phone. Then the moment he hangs up, he's like, oh, what was it? What are you knocking on my door from?
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of, if it was setting anybody up, it was David Arquette.
There's even a moment where you think maybe it's Henry Winkler.
Yeah, briefly. I had the briefly, same
and then that's put to bed after Sydney has went back to school. They shut it down. He gets killed, which leads us up to Stu's big shindig at his house, big house party, where everybody is meeting up. Billy. Outside of a run-in at school with Sydney, Sydney and Bill haven't really talked. He's going to show up at this party and basically, you know, try to fix things. Meanwhile, the Gail has decided that she's from an invite from Dewey, who is trying to put the moves on.
Yes.
Basically says, I can get you into the party. Gail plants a camera there. But it's on delay.
Yep. 30-second delay.
And which leads us to the next kill, which is Tatum.
Tatum in gruesome fashion.
It was great.
Yeah. So Ghostface shows up and he is trying to kill Tatum. And Tatum tries to escape through a doggy door. And he raises the garage and she basically gets half decapitated, her body, which no one shockingly finds for a while.
Yeah.
Sydney ends up finding her.
A lot
later.
Of people cleared out like right after that scene of like nobody taking the back exit. Nobody didn't park by the garage.
I had to yawn.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now they know Ghostface is at this party. Everybody's kind of clearing out. And I can't remember. No. So, because my mind is going to the big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not right.
Before that.
Well, because they're starting to make her think like, Billy and some of the other ones, Courtney Cox, are starting to make her think that maybe her dad is Ghostface.
So at no point you thought Kevin, or not Kevin, Randy maybe?
Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah. Is that Randy then?
Yeah, Randy. The video guy.
Yeah.
Who loves and worships horror movies.
Which is a big, that's a big like gaslight kind of for the movie because whenever Drew Barrymore's character is interacting with Ghostface, he's asking her horror questions like, I'll let you live if you can answer this horror question.
Yeah.
Which we didn't hit on some great Easter eggs for Wes Craven stuff. Mm-hmm. He even makes fun of himself. It's like,
well, did you see the janitor in the school?
Oh, that looked like Freddy.
He called him Freddy. He had the glove and the sweater and the hat on. Yeah. Good job, Freddy.
Yeah.
I was like, hey,
freaking
whoa,
cameos, man.
That.
That's a cameo. Whenever Brandy is kind of insinuated that it might be, I was almost pretty convinced it was him because he likes Sydney. When Billy tries to get back with Sydney and they go up to the room to have sex, he's like, I'm gonna do something, basically insinuates, and we never really hear anything from him again.
No, he's just kind of pouty.
Yeah. I think it's after that though, Stu decides he's gonna go get a drink, which you would think
he's going to see Tatum in the garage, but we never hear from Stu again.
No, for a long time.
So from there, Sydney and Billy have sex.
Sydney has been holding out.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Billy or Randy is explaining the rules of surviving a horror movie.
To like the last 10 people that are at the party.
To the last 10 people, basically, you got to be a virgin, you can't do drugs and drink, and you can never say, I'll be right back, which is at this point where Stu says, I'll be right back. I'm going to go get a beer.
Yeah.
Sydney loses her virginity, and out of nowhere, Ghostface appears and stabs Billy.
Yep. In the back.
In the back.
And in the gut, both.
Sydney runs away, and I think it's at this point that Gail and Dewey are going for a walk. They get a report that there's a car in the woods. Mm-hmm. They find it, and it ends up being Sydney's dad's, who at this point, it was halfway speculated that he might actually be the killer.
Yeah, because the police found out he never landed where he's supposed to go because she'd been trying to get a hold of him. So they were starting to make it think, especially the Gail, trying to put the two and two together that maybe the dad was responsible for the killings.
Yeah. What else?
Well, the next thing I can really remember is that, you know, Ghostface shows up and...
Ghostface comes up on Randy.
Randy, while he's watching Halloween.
Yeah, Sydney ends up screaming, distracting him, causing him to go outside.
Yeah.
Sydney meets up with the news reporter's cameraman in his van who's watching the feed.
And it's a 30-second delay. He forgets.
But he had actually fell asleep, so whenever he awakes, he sees Ghostface with Randy, but he's not there. Surprise, he's killed by Ghostface.
Yep. Poor Kenny.
Yeah. Sydney runs away, and I think it's
the car crash happens with Courtney Cox and all this stuff, and Sydney's in the car accident. She runs back into the house.
Yeah.
And this is where she is confronted by Ghostface.
Not two Ghostface. She's confronted by Randy and Stu.
Right. They're in there arguing outside on the porch.
Yes.
Saying
they're trying
to
get in.
He's the killer.
It's they're out of frame. Ghostface leaves, and then they're both there.
Yeah.
Just enough time.
She knows it's one of them.
One of them.
She just shuts the door and locks it. Smart.
Yeah,
I don't care who it is. One of you two did it.
Yeah. And then Billy comes stumbling from the stairs. He's still alive somehow.
Blood all over him. Yeah.
Billy's like, you got to let him in. Randy bolts in. Stu's still outside.
Billy shoots Randy.
Yeah, shoots Randy because he's convinced that he's a killer.
Then that he killed Stu outside. Yeah,
and then our reveal.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Sydney Prescott's obviously reeling at this point because finds out one of her best friends is the killer and that he's killed Stu and Tatum and all these people, and then now Billy shot him, and when she turns around, guess who's in the kitchen?
Stu's
in the kitchen eating.
Stu's stewing.
Yeah, just laughing.
Yeah.
And then that's when she's like, wait, what's going on? And then Billy is like, ha ha ha, we are Ghostface.
Yeah.
So then the reveal is that Billy and Stu are both Ghostface and that they're both basically psychopaths, sociopaths, and have decided to just basically mentally torture and murder
people
in Sydney's life.
Yeah. Well, because we find out,
Billy's dad.
So it's revealed that Sydney's mom
was a whore.
She was sleeping with the guy that Sydney accused of killing her mom.
Yes.
Actually had an affair, but Gail, the reporter, is like, the evidence doesn't really match up. His story stayed the same all this year. I don't think it's him.
Yeah.
So we find out though that Sydney's mom was sleeping with Billy's dad.
Mm-hmm. And
their parents to get divorced, and he held a grudge. And so he killed her mom. And I think they found out they liked killing.
Mm-hmm.
Billy ropes Stu into doing all this. Stu's just, he's just a very malleable guy.
Obviously,
absolutely.
Not. Maybe a little schizophrenic up there.
Yeah, absolutely reeling, like off the walls performance from Matthew Lillard.
Yeah.
This moment of these two guys, like chemistry, the vibe, like I want to see that Funny Games.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
You just need to watch the new Funny Games.
Okay.
It's very good.
Yeah, very much like that. Very that much vibe. Like that.
Yeah. The actors are, yeah, it's great. But they're stabbing each other scene.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Oh, so good.
So good. But yeah, they're going to try to the whole thing on the dad.
They reveal the dad in the closet and they've
kidnapped.
They've
never
said, yeah, they said that they're going to be the ones to survive framing her dad
in a murder-suicide.
And killing Sydney. Yeah.
And so they stab each other to death. Oh, well, not to death. They stab each other quite a few times and make it look like they put a struggle and then they were going to murder suicide, you know, the dad and Sydney. But Courtney Cox comes in with a gun, shoots Matthew Lillard. Right? How it happened first? Or shoots? Yeah. Because then she shoots Billy and you think Billy's dead and then he's not. And then she ends up shooting him again in the head or something, right?
Shoots Billy first.
What about Matthew Lillard?
He runs away. I think, or maybe because
he was almost dying because of the blood loss he had from the
because he was just laying there. Yeah,
yeah. But
shoots Billy, runs away. Sydney and the dad
are like
get away.
Yeah,
no, they get away because she ends up hiding in the closet. Calls.
Yeah,
like you let her get away. And she's basically got the voice distorter and it's like. Basically pulling it on them, and lures Billy to a closet and stabs him with an umbrella of all things.
And then Courtney Cox shoots him. He gets shot to death.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. He was after the umbrella stab.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you know that's basically the end of the film. Everybody's happy ever after until Scream 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
Which all of these characters are still in.
Yeah.
And they're still getting great reviews. So,
I mean, they've been up and down.
The last couple have been high.
I think it was Scream and Scream 6.
Yeah. Scream. Yeah. It's got
Scream 5. Yeah.
It looks like a giant Scream, but it's Scream 5. Scream 5. The V takes up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, for never seeing this film, I just really expected that I wouldn't think it held up well, that it would be cliche, that I knew what was going to happen. I did not. And this film really held up and I had a great time with Scream.
This movie is a perfect example. Like if someone asked me like, what is camp? I would not reference this movie.
No, I wouldn't either.
Because this is, this
I thought
movie,
you were about to say this. Like, no,
no, this movie is extremely meta. Mm-hmm. Just knowing the director, the influences that it has, it was like, it feels really placed in the real world. And so, like, really grounded.
Yeah.
But almost hyper, over-dramatized, like characters is what I probably mean to say.
Yeah.
So.
No, I agree. And it's 112 minutes. It's, like, the perfect type of.
Yeah, like a feature-length, like, movie. It kind of felt long. There are points where it felt long, but. No, I agree. It's a good length.
Yeah. So Scream for me, one of my new favorite spooky films. It's got a solid 4.0 rating on Letterboxd, which is really high praise for especially a horror film.
Yeah.
I like it way better than Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street, which we watched and discussed last Thursday.
Yeah.
It's a totally different film, which just shows how versatile and flexible of a director that Wes Craven really is. Mm-hmm. Then you got Red Eye, which is fantastic. Cillian Murphy and Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really like Scream, and I think it's going to be, you know, after all said and done, you know, because when I think of like classic Halloween and spooky movies, I think of Scream, Halloween, Jason or Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
I think this is going to end up taking the cake for that list of like old school stuff.
I don't think you're wrong.
Well, you just watched Friday the 13th and you got a two star difference between them.
Listen, Nightmare, we can talk. I'll save some of it
for
I'll give
Friday
a little
13th.
Bit but to the little teaser that the first hour not that enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of it is editing, some of it is just the actors.
Mm-hmm.
But the last 30 minutes is a great ride.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've seen Friday the 13th before, it's just been a while.
Yeah, that lake scene got me.
It makes me want to watch the cabin in the woods again. But yeah, no, I love Scream. This was a fun week. This was a chock full week and all great films.
It was a chock full day for me.
Yeah, well, it was a great week for me. Day. And then you have, that brings us to what we'll be watching next week, which is Friday the 13th, Mother and Seven, with the optional films being Barbarian and The Sixth Sense, which I will be watching all of these.
Yeah, I'm going to say, just pointing out a theme, and I don't think this is just because it's a horror movie and you could just draw it out of the hat and have this luck, but the theme of these three movies, really spot on. Mm-hmm. Like,
wait, which ones, this week or last
the
week?
The ones that we did this week, yeah, and next week. Mm-hmm. I think there's a chance for, you know, there to be some, yeah, similarities. But yeah, it's just a lot of parallels, especially considering they're all slashers.
Mm-hmm. I know. There's a lot of these films are like the next week you get that way too. You get a little more spooky stuff, but then everybody's been talking to me about The Crow. Because I've been talking about her work a lot, which is a bunch of older guys in their 40s and 50s.
You haven't seen The Crow?
No, I've never seen The Crow.
Oh, so this is going to be new for both of us.
Yeah. I've never seen The Crow and I've never seen Talk to Me. So it's two brand new films for me.
Yeah, Talk to Me, I'm not looking forward to at all. at all.
I can't wait for that one. For that reason, too. And I haven't seen The Shining or Silence of the Lambs in a long time.
Silence of the Lambs is not scary.
No, but it's a great film.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. Anyway, and then The Witch, which is also kind of...
Caitlin's seen The Witch. She says it's not scary.
No, it's not. It's intense. And it's a great film. It's very... The imagery, kind of like House of a Thousand Corpses, the imagery. Not in a gory way. Just intense. In like Midsommar kind of way.
I love the imagery. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't like the well scene in House of a Thousand Corpse where people are jumping out. I don't like that type of stuff.
Where the eyes are glowing.
And the tunnels. I don't like that stuff.
So out of next week, I'm probably most looking forward to Seven and Barbarian. Although Mother is one of my all-time favorite films in terms of like weirdness.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to revisit Mother, specifically Ed Harris.
I can't wait to do a deep dive on Mother.
Yeah.
Because I think there's some dialogue that Aronofsky, just knowing the fact that Aronofsky and Jennifer Lawrence dated after this movie.
And during it.
During it.
They got together during this film.
It's very like life on a canvas type of, it's just kind of weird.
Yeah, this movie's super weird. That's why I like it. All in on Mother. But yeah, I'm excited to give next week. I haven't seen, me and Abby are going to watch Seven and Barbarian together.
I love Seven.
Yeah.
Like, so good. Like that's my toxic trait.
I really, and I can't wait for you. I hope that you go back and rewatch some of these, like that I put as suggested ones that you didn't watch. Yeah. If you have a better week, like The Lost Boys and like X, Devil's Rejects, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think you'd get a lot of them. Now, the last time, the very last week leading up the week of Halloween, that's our loaded week. We have six films, three mandatory, three options. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest week. And Halloween, American Psycho, and Hereditary.
Well, Halloween, I'm watching Friday. So I might just have to freshen up on that week. So I could probably fit another one in.
Good. Because that's the optional ones are The Thing, Suspiria, and Skinamarink.
Ooh, Thing and Suspiria are been like some... Like classics.
Skinamarink is just one I want to really discuss.
I know.
That would be a fun one. I'll talk about it off pod.
Yeah.
So anyway, so next week, one more time, we'll be breaking down Friday the 13th, Seven, and Mother.
Watch them.
And Barbarian and the Sixth Sense if you got extra time.
Yeah.
So so this has been another episode of Mostly Film. Hope you liked what you've been listening to. Hope you got your knife sharp and your fingers ready. They have no correlation with each other. Just leave us five stars. Tell us how much you love us and what a great job we do. We'll be back with you next week to break down some more films. This has been Mostly Film, your one-stop chaotic shop for all things the world of cinema. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan McQuarter, to my beautiful co-host, JP Payton.
See you guys.
See you guys.